Welcome to Defining the Future, the podcast that celebrates the ideas, innovations, and people making the world a better place. I'm Claire Rutherford, a patent attorney and founder of Definition IP. In this episode, I'm joined by Professor Carrie Ambler. Professor Ambler is a bioscientist who works jointly as Lightox's CSO and as a professor at Durham University. Today, we're going to be chatting about Lightox's groundbreaking technology. So thanks, Carrie, for joining me today. Really appreciate it. It's good to see you, and it would be good to hear a little bit more about Lightox and your journey to Lightox today.
Oh, thank you, Claire. It's really a pleasure to be able to tell you a bit about myself and Lightox and the journey we've been on. So Lightox is a startup company that we founded actually in 2016. So we're 8.5 years in. And we had been developing new chemicals through research, myself and Andy Whiting at Durham University. And we had discovered that those chemicals had some really interesting properties that we thought we could exploit commercially. In particular, those chemicals had the ability to target and kill cells of our choice. So using that type of chemical technology that was new, and we thought we could try to take that and see if we could develop a therapeutic for particularly indications where existing therapeutic options were poor, where chemotherapy really doesn't work, or there's just limited options for patients at that point. So that has led us to found Lightox, and we have been on a drug development journey for the past 9 years, and it's been a very big learning curve for me.
Yeah, really exciting, because obviously you have transitioned from academia into a startup company, but it might be quite interesting actually to look back and think, how did you get to that? Because I know you've got quite an interesting journey into the world of business and startup technology, and you have, your background is quite a mixed background of technologies, which potentially helps you with some of the challenges you hit in business. So it might be good to hear a little bit about your background story. So where did you start, and what created this innovator?
Yeah, it's been a long journey, Claire. So I
not that long.
Didn't think I want, well, it has, I've been working in science now for about 25 years. I didn't think I wanted to be a scientist. So when I headed off to university, my first entry was in architecture. And I went to university thinking I would gonna design buildings and landscape gardens and or do something involved design. Really realized quickly that actually my creative skills were not best put to art or artistic endeavors. And I transitioned from architecture into a landscape design focus, thinking I could, because I quite like plants, and realized again, what I really liked about plants was actually the plant. So I moved into plant science. So I have a degree in agriculture, and I was very much focused on greenhouse management, being able to think about plant breeding and building sort of, you know, better crops for the future. That was my original idea. And partly because I would say my educational background wasn't great. I had never had a biological or a biology class. I'd had minimal experience to understanding about how things worked. And so it wasn't actually until my final class or final year in the US semester system where I took biochemistry. And I just had never had any science. And it completely blew my mind away. I actually realized at that point.
That was the trigger
that
point.
That was the moment that I realized I was fascinated by it. And I credit the two people who gave me some support through that, both my lecturer and my first research supervisor, John Tomic, who enabled me to, discover that I wanted to be a scientist.
Discover that desire to,
yes,
to find out more.
Yeah, so I, never having had a science class, never having had a biology class, I applied to do a PhD in biology, and I went to the University of North Carolina, thinking I was going to do plant biology, having loved the plant side. I went to the University of North Carolina, and they have a system in the US where you are a member of the department, so you do rotations. And so I did a couple of rotations in different labs studying plant science. One of them was about plant pathology, one of them was about gene silencing. But I took my final rotation in a animal development embryology person's lab. Her name is Vicky Bouch, and I never looked back. So I actually, And I mean this honestly, I fell in love with the embryo, because the embryo is an essence and pattern. And again, back to my design interests, the way an embryo develops, it develops the same way pretty much every time. So, and in, again, in thinking about pattern, I studied blood vessels. And I was really interested in how, what we didn't call them stem cells at the time, but they were blood vessel stem cells, how they arised, how they then formed blood vessels, and how they then created that first vascular network, which is actually a really good pinch point for life. So if you don't develop that first vascular network, the embryo isn't viable and will not be able to go through full gestation. So that's how I ended up in as a developmental biologist and looking at those original cells of interest.
Yeah.
I moved to the UK in 2003. To study stem cells. So okay, and I went from embryonic stem cells to adult stem cells in the skin, spent a number of years training in that. And that's essentially how I ended up in skin. And my research interest involved in epithelial tissue. So the surface tissues, so skin, your intestines, the type of your inside of your mouth. And I've been studying skin repair, tissue repair, and wound healing for the better part of my research career.
That's amazing, actually, that move from, I think it's really inspirational for people to hear that as well, that you can start with the architectural without that, and just finding that love for the science somewhere along the way. And look at you now, you're a professor, and you are the CSO of a startup company. So it's incredible to see that journey come through, and the trigger points that just by exposing yourself to different things and seeing what's out there, that ability to move into it. That's a really interesting story, I always think, for people to hear. Obviously, then you were at Durham. Durham is where you, when you came across to the UK, you've done a lot of your research there on the skin side. How did you move from the academic side to that moment where actually moving from academia into a startup is a huge leap? What was the trigger for that? At what point did you think, you know what, I think there's something here that is going to move me from the bench where I'm researching and finding interesting things to trying to create a business which solves a problem in the world?
Yeah, I think I've always had quite a big appetite for risk. I think partly because my background has taught me that sometimes you just have to follow the interests. And I really felt that we had some interesting molecules and interesting chemicals that we could potentially develop a drug that might help people. And that's quite an important driver because it's the, you know, what we do in the academic field is once removed. So I do research, I put it out in the world of publication, other people use my research for other things. And that is really important. And I don't want to undermine that as a really important activity. But when then you yourself potentially can take that piece of research and take it that next step and that next level to try to apply it, in our case, into developing a new therapeutic for patients is just incredibly rewarding.
So that purpose-driven
sort
of, absolutely. You can see it. You can see the difference that this might make. And it's in the case of Lytox, it could make a difference in so many different ways. I'm aware at the moment your focus is around oral cancers. Is that correct? That mouth cancer is one of the main focus points for Lytox technology. But it could be applied to so many things. So do you think you can see this moving from currently its direction in oral cancers, mouth cancers, to then just this is a stepping stone of the technology being broadened out and its purpose is bigger than that?
Absolutely. So we actually have two main drug pipelines now. So the first drug is, as you said, focused on removing of really early stage lesions in the mouth. So these are actually cancers and precancers. So lesions that may or may not be treated. So patients can have these and your dentist might identify one, but often they just get waited on to see what happens to them. And we know that a significant amount of them, so between 1 in 4 and 1 in 8 of them, will become a cancer, but we just don't know which ones. And so this is a way to treat those lesions without causing significant surgical problems that come with massive resection. That drug that we're developing for the mouth as an epithelial surface potentially can be used in a number of other places, including the cervix, so cervical cancer, esophageal cancer, because actually that drug, the way it works, it will work on many cells and many precancerous cells in lots of different locations. So that's that first drug. But actually, because the chemistry that we developed all those years ago is so flexible, we actually have a second pipeline drug we're now working on to tackle antimicrobial resistance in wounds. So we have a way to, again, to remove bacterial cells, both problematic bacterial cells like Staph aureus and antibiotic resistant Staph aureus, and in wound sites to help healing processes go better for people with chronic wounds.
Which is obviously a huge issue at the moment with antimicrobial resistance and people trying to move away from that. And because you're a light-based technology, I guess that it's giving a whole new opportunity to deal with this without looking at the antibiotic option.
Yeah, and actually what's really nice too is it's less invasive than a pill or a drug that you'd have to inject in your body, mm-hmm. because it's actually, we deliver our drug on the surface. So like you deliver it to a lesion on your mouth, but only that lesion, or you deliver it to a wound site and only that wound site. So rather than taking a pill that you might take, which will cure, would not like potentially get rid of the cells that you want to get rid of, but can also have very significant impacts on cells that you don't want to get rid of and cause people some systemic problems. So we are very much focused on that targeted approach to really get at the nut of the problem with having the least amount of off-target problems that we can.
Yeah, no, it sounds amazing. In fact, it sounds so amazing that you would think that surely people would be throwing money at you, but no startup has an easy journey. And I assume that in the last 8.5 years, going from an early stage concept where you have some benchtop technology that you know works to having drugs, it's not been necessarily a straight line.
Absolutely not.
I wonder if you could maybe give an indication of how you have found, because I know that actually Lytox has been successful in the last couple of years, that you have raised funding in what I would say is a difficult funding landscape for biotech. So you've been doing the right things. So it'd be good for people to hear how you found that journey and how you survived the journey and flourished after all of this.
So drug development is, we don't make things at the moment, right? So it's a difficult process because we're not making a test or something you might be able to put your hands on tangibly. We're actually on a very long journey, and it is a journey of milestones. So did that next piece of evidence support the development process? And so with that, you do have to have people who want to come on board and join you for that journey as you go. So funding all along the way has been about producing a piece of work demonstrating that the drug works and it works in the models that we work on, and then providing that evidence to raise the next bit of funding. And we are really fortunate to have had some long-term investors from the beginning. And last year we brought in some new investors and raised a bit more money. But you never stop raising money when you're in a drug development process, frankly. So now that we've raised a little bit more money, we'll have to go out and do it again. And that's because to take a drug from start to the end is hundreds of millions of pounds. We are still early in that journey, and we are very fortunate to have had not only investment, but we've also had quite a number of grants that have helped support that journey as well. But it's not easy. It really isn't easy. And I could say that you have to have faith and confidence in what you do and have people believe in you and have a good team. And I would say that our team that has supported us have been the most important thing in that fundraising journey.
Okay.
They've been incredibly dedicated to us, and I am very proud of the people I work with, and they have helped us both in terms of developing and building the evidence that we need, but also supporting us as we have to move forward in our journey.
Yeah. No, I mean, you've had an incredible journey so far, but it is just the beginning.
Yes.
So what's next for yourself and Lytox?
So as I mentioned, Lytox is at a really exciting stage. So we are the first drug. We are in the sort of final stages of what we call preclinical development. So to enable the drug to be approved by the regulators for clinical trials, we have to collect a lot of evidence. And we're in that, I would say, evidence collecting journey right now. So we know it works. It works in all the models we've tested on, but we need to make sure it's safe and that before we can then put it to a patient.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are in that sort of final evidence collecting point. Mm-hmm. And so with all that evidence we're now generating, we hope we should, if all goes well, we should be putting it into a human being next year. And that will be one of the most incredible days of my life. And I really hope that I don't know, because I don't think I will have, be very, very worried. Fortunately, our clinicians are doing that in Liverpool.
Yeah.
But I, in some ways, just don't want to know, because I'm
phenomenal.
Not sure I would sleep.
So we're aiming for that to be about your 10th birthday, the Lytox's 10th birthday. That would be an incredible combination of events. But actually, 10 years to get to patient contact is not bad in a drug development route. So that's really impressive.
We've had really very few setbacks. And I know that sounds, almost don't want to jinx it at this point, but we've had a really good, slow and steady pace towards the clinic. And obviously COVID left set us back a couple of years, but in general, we have really just kept moving forward and moving forward as we could, as we had the money to do so, and continuing to make that progress. With the funding we received last year, we've accelerated that pathway a little bit. And so we are now looking quite nicely at that, putting it into a patient next year. It should be early next year, at the rate we're going.
Obviously, you share your time equally between being a professor and the CSO of Lytox. How do you manage to balance your time to do that?
I am incredibly fortunate that both of my jobs enable me to look at my week, figure out what needs to get done, and make those priorities. So it is definitely not 2.5 days in one job and 2.5 days in the other. There are weeks I spend all my week on one job and all my week on the other. And that just depends on what the priorities are. And I am very fortunate to be able to have that flexibility. I think the university itself is innately quite a flexible job. And then, but then Lytox has its own demands. So particularly when you have to go to conferences or you need to go out and see investors or even collaborators, you sometimes need more than 2 days in a week to do it. And so it is about that balance between understanding what the priorities are, being cautious and careful to make sure you weight the responsibilities as they need to be weighted, and then working around it. So it isn't always straightforward.
So it's prioritizing rather than splitting time in a very distinct fashion. So it probably fits quite well with the current discussions around hybrid working and how to make things work. A lot of this is around prioritizing rather than simply being very rigid about your scheduling. And do you manage to fit any time for yourself in there as well? Or is that, you know, the 2 hours that you've got spare are sleeping time?
Hopefully more than two. Actually, I sleep quite a lot. I really do sort of value my sleep. So I do try to make sure that
I get that
good sleep in, because I absolutely need it. No, I do have some hobbies. So I have 2 children, 2 teenage boys and 3 dogs. They keep me quite busy.
Yeah.
I also
ride grounded.
And grounded. I ride a motorbike, and I really enjoy time on the bike because it's quiet time. There's nothing but between you and the road. I don't listen to radio. I don't do anything. Put that helmet on and away you go. And I try to spend a couple trips a year where, it's just you on the road, kind of
get a bit of headspace.
Yeah. And that's been really good. So, and I do like that time away. I actually like to commute on the bike in the summertime too, because again, it gives me the chance to get through that sort of early morning thought process.
Sometimes just to have a little bit of space where you are doing something where you're having to concentrate. So you're driving or you're on the bike, or in my case, I'd sometimes go out running, I keep going, but you get a bit of headspace. I think it can allow you to find a bit of balance in your busy life, which is always good as well.
Yeah. And the other thing I do is I make stained glass windows, and that's amazing. More of a winter indoor type hobby. And I am still recovering from my shoulder from having made Christmas ornaments about 20 Christmas ornaments this year, but I really enjoy
that harking back to your architectural roots.
It is about the design part.
Yes.
And what I've learned over the years is I like to do craft rather than I actually like to do art. And so it fits back with the piecing things together.
Obviously, this puzzle piece combination, which seems to be the theme that's ran throughout your choices in your academic and business life.
Yeah, and I just laid a Victorian floor, which had 4,000 individual tiles, which I laid all by myself.
So the ultimate patterning.
Absolutely. Individually all by myself. So it is about that,
that
putting it all together. So there's no doubt that the puzzling, the pieces together, I really much
has been
enjoy.
The thing that has sort of driven a lot of your decision making.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that seems quite nicely into what my next question was going to be, which was, do you have any advice for anyone who may also be thinking of following in similar footsteps? They're sort of maybe looking in their academic field and taking those first steps into the startup world, or they're even earlier in their journey and they're not sure, but they think that maybe they can't see themselves purely in one route or another. Are there any recommendations you have for people who are looking at you thinking, oh, that's interesting, wonder how I could do something like that?
Yeah, I think if you are an academically minded person, so a postdoc or an early stage researcher, you probably should spend some time looking and learning about a company. So the pressures and requirements in running a company are completely different. And I did not have a clue what I was doing when I started. And we've made lots of mistakes, partly because we're a bit naive about some of the things that were required. I think understanding what a company's pressures are and how you manage those is important. It is very different to the academic pressures of that we have in our university life. I think real world, shadowing would be something I would suggest. So find a company that would be willing to, you know, let you see what's going on. And we have our board meeting was this week, and again, we had a number of visitors, so people want to see what a board meeting is like and understand what it means to actually run a company. I think starting to actually get that experience may make you aware of not only the good things, but some very, very tough days. Yeah. I say this freely that, you know, in the early days, there were two Christmases we didn't pay ourselves because, you know, to pay the staff meant I didn't get paid at Christmas. Yeah. And that's just part of what you may have to do when you run a company it's not so easy to make it work. But
easy from the outside to see all the success. Yeah. It's not always as easy to see the work that it took to get there.
Yes.
I sometimes think it's a little bit like having a baby. A lot of people tell you things beforehand, but until you've done it, you never really understand how much you're going to love it and also how hard it's going to be.
I think that's absolutely a fair, as a person of mama too, I think that's a very fair statement.
People from the outside, you can learn so much, and I think it is good to educate yourself on it. But sometimes the doing it is a reality in itself.
It was for me, definitely a trial by fire and a significant learning experience for me. But I think you have to also have good people you work with.
Yeah.
Relatively large appetite for risk because you are doing something risky. Mm-hmm. You have to have confidence in the people that you are involved in and you have to really, science has to be good, but you also have to really believe in the science and that you are on the right path. So it does take a little bit of confidence that your ideas will come to fruition.
And do you find having that ultimate purpose of knowing that the patients, what they will get from it will get you through those harder periods where it's like, you know, at the end of this, there are real people whose lives will be changed by what you're doing?
Absolutely. In fact, we went to an oral cancer charity conference run by the Swallows Charity, and we took six people from the company. And part of that was to allow those six people to speak to patients, because this is a charity, patient, and companies and clinician conference. And it breaks your heart to hear some of their stories. And yet you have such hope too for them because they're there. They're wanting to make things better, not just for themselves, but for other people. But to understand their journey really does bring it all home and it makes it real.
Allows you to connect that science and the hard work that's been going on to occasionally see that end point. I think, you know, I've heard that from a number of people I've spoken to that it's a long journey. And the science is great and it's all, but sometimes seeing that real world end point is the driver that pulls people forward.
Absolutely. I think keeping it focused on those ultimate goals is really important. So we, in the wound care space, we've just had two patient roundtables. Obviously, we're starting to move into that space. And again, we have not only had feedback from those roundtables about sort of what you're developing and your ideas, but then people call you up and say, Can I give you more feedback? Can I be a patient advocate? And that's actually really interesting too, to have those people who are passionate about changing and making things better. And that's really important for us. Sometimes it can be a lot. And I think, you know, having taken the staff to the Swallows conference was great, but then you have to sort of protect them from that too as well, because it can be really emotional. So you have to also have the ability to not be solely driven by emotion. You have to make critical business decisions. And we obviously have shareholders we need to protect and make sure that we're able to take difficult decisions when required to make sure that we are able to do our best developmental program. So you can't always be involved in emotion, but I think sometimes that touch point is important.
Yeah, that balancing of, we quite often talk in sort of worlds like the B Corp world about profit and purpose being linked, that you've got to have a product that will last. So it's got to be able to fulfill all of the requirements of a product that can make it to the market. And so it's got to be able to balance that ability to have longevity and have a purpose there. So it's that consistent balance between the two, which I guess also leads to the question of where next. Where do you think you'll go next? Obviously, you've got a lot going on. You've said how much you love your academic work. You've got Lightox. But is there anything else in your future plans?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the nice thing about being the CEO of a company, and particularly with these early stage drugs, is I've had the fantastic opportunity to take research into a development pipeline. There is a time I have to hand that off and let someone else do it. And it's actually quite exciting to know that I will have given, which is basically like raising a child, I've given birth to this idea, this concept and this project. At some point, it will end up being through the clinical pipeline.
Yeah.
So a CMO will take over. So a chief medical officer will take over. And that will end up as a project I have less need. They don't need me so much for.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of things also we're working on at Lightox that I'm kind of now incubating and bringing forward. But actually, I am thinking more globally. And I spent about 3 months in Singapore last year on sabbatical developing some of the ideas, the next ideas that I want to work with, revolving again around skin, understanding how skin and the environment are really important for regular
things. As your patent attorney, I do need to say, don't say too much just yet.
No, but skin and how the environment's important for regular wound healing.
Yeah.
So that's something I'm...
This is the next big idea.
So that was a fantastic experience. And I mean, living in Singapore was amazing. And it was a really inspirational time for me, again, to intellectually step away from my current projects a little bit, not always, but a little bit, and then begin to be able to think about the next things I want to do. The next 10 years of my life.
Yeah. Exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to finding out.
Absolutely.
But no, this has been really, really amazing. It's great to hear your journey, the journey of Lightox, where it's going. I cannot wait to see what happens in the next couple of years. Where, if people wanted to find out a little bit more about you or Lightox, is there anywhere people can go and have a look and find out a bit more?
So we have a website, which is obviously our company's Lightox, lightox.co.uk. It talks about the two projects I've talked to you about. So the wound care project, the project looking at oral cancers and oral dysplasias. But it also talks a little bit about some of the other things we've done. So we have a few other little successes along the way that you can also engage with. And the nice part is you got to not only meet me, but you get to see the wider team.
Yes.
And I mean, because this isn't a journey that I'm on. It's the journey that we're all on. And I said, without them, we would be nowhere.
Yeah, it's a great team having met them. They're doing a really good job. And it's been great to speak to you today. Thank you so much.
Oh, Claire, it's been absolutely fantastic. Thank you for inviting me.
Fab, thanks. Thanks for listening to Defining the Future. For any information on what we've covered in this episode, head to the show notes. It would be great if you could rate and leave a review for the podcast. Subscribe to the show so you don't miss out on future episodes.